Welcome to the Kanem, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Planet X arrived in the inner solar system in 2003. During the summer of 2003, it was approaching from Orion, on the opposite side of the sun from the Earth. It was visible then as a second sun, reflecting sunlight back toward the Earth from this massive dust cloud that shrouds it. It also began tugging on the Atlantic Rift, highly magnetized hardened magma at the bottom of the deep rift running down the Atlantic from Iceland to Antarctica. This rift forms what the Zetas have called a third magnet on the surface of the Earth. Planet X tugged on this S-shaped rift, wanting this surface magnet to stay in alignment with the other two magnets, which are Earth and itself. The first magnet and the second magnet. Since Planet X arrived in the inner solar system and rushed up to the Sun from the direction of Orion, a southern constellation, it was pointing its north pole toward the sun's south pole, and the tugging on that magnet twice a day became obvious on the USGS live seismographs, a trend that had only started in March 2003. Distinct 12-hour intervals, filled with jiggles and wobbles, would occur twice a day and were recorded on the USGS live seismographs. These live seismographs are recorded on the Zeta Talk website in the Global Quakes section and the Sweeps sections. For those who are curious enough to want to see this dramatic occurrence themselves, these 12-hour points, called the face and dark point, are equivalent to 12 UTC, Universal Time, or high noon over Greenwich, and 0 UTC, or midnight over Greenwich. And the 12-hour jiggles and wobbles would occur between these points. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Third Magnet, written June 8, 2003. The distress a highly magnetized Atlantic rift has on the surging magma is to create an irregular outgo at the North Pole, where the particles flowing through the core are going straight up and out, but the particles that flowed along the Atlantic rift are emerging at an angle. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And is this distress evident, the new and additional angle of magnetic particles outflowing at the North Pole? Indeed it was. And I quote from the magnet section on the Zeta Talk website. June 11, 2005, Edmonton Journal. A Canadian scientist who recently returned from a trip to measure the pole's current location says it has now left Canadian territory and crossed into international waters. End of the tail of Planet X streams out from its north pole, the outbound pole for magnetic particles. The tail was thus pointing directly toward the Earth in June of 2003, and this too was noticed. And a quote from some material documented in the Red Dust section on the Zeta Talk website. The sunset tonight, June 16, 2003, in Montreal looked strange, much redder than I've seen. It was red, red, red. And from another. I live in L.A., and on June 24, 2003, the clouds have a very reddish tint to them, very unusual, and you never see sunsets like this in L.A. And from another. At about midnight, June 24, 2003, over here in Scotland, the clouds seem to appear to have a reddish-pinkish color. I've never seen this before. And from another, on June 28, 2003. A group of us have been observing, in Melbourne, Australia, over this past week or so, a thick cloud, a red color. It was more noticeable about 3-4 hours before sunrise in the cloud toward the eastern horizon. End of the quotes from the Red Dust section. Power outages occurred around the world by August of 2003, also the result of this massive tail hosing directly at the Earth. Those living in New York City will remember the outage that had a million commuters quietly walking out of the city on August 28, 2003. Outages explained as power surges or brownouts, not caused by any equipment failure, happened around the world from August to November, then stopped. And I quote from a summary on power outages collected at that time. On August 14th, the massive power outage swept across swaths of the eastern United States and Canada. On August 28th, power outage during the evening rush hour created havoc for about 1 million commuters in New York City. On September 1st, a power outage blacked out parts of the Malaysia Peninsula. September 2nd, a power outage left at least 3 million Mexicans in the southern Yucatan Peninsula without electricity. September 2nd, Finland, Russia, and an overnight blackout in Sydney. September 5th, thousands of homes were plunged into darkness after a power cut in North London. September 23rd, a power outage struck the capital of Denmark and southern Sweden, leaving 4 million people without electricity. September 28th, much of Italy is without power after a blackout swept the country. October 6th, a major power failure blacks out the Czech Republic. And November 7th, most of Chile lost power in a major blackout. End of the quotes from the summary. And the Zetas explained, and I quote from Zeta Talk, Charged Dust Cloud, written October 24, 2003. Dust in Earth's atmosphere drifts down to settle, at times slowly depending upon its weight, but the process is inevitable, often clearing out during a rainstorm where tiny dust particles cause the moisture to cling, a start to the raindrop. Why then, on a water planet such as Planet X, does a dust cloud shroud the planet perpetually? The dust cloud, composed primarily of red oxidized iron particles, is charged, and the particles thus more interested in a magnetic dance than in any gravity attraction that the weighty corpus of Planet X might present. The cloud bristles, resisting gravity as electrified hair brushed on a dry winter's day does, standing out from the head and crackling. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. At this point, as Planet X passed the Sun's south pole and moved to a position between the Earth and the Sun, the hosing north pole of Planet X stayed glued to the Sun's south pole. This changed the dynamics, as Planet X was now swinging its south pole toward the Earth. The Earth was spared the hose for the time being, but another drama was about to emerge. Quotes. Finding Planet X in its path, the Earth stopped going round the Sun in its orbit and remains there still, caught in the tracks in front of Planet X like a deer frozen in the headlights. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Sacred Orbits, written August 20th, 2003. Are not orbits sacred in accordance with Newton's laws, set out in time long past by motion causing the draw of gravity to be unchanged through time? Newton was almost entirely wrong regarding the forces at play. Orbits within the ecliptic and the rotation of bodies are caused by factors outside of themselves, including the flow of gravity particles and the repulsion force that balances this. Magnetic particles, the sweeping arms of the Sun, and the backwash of particles at the ecliptic going into the Sun. Thus, orbits are living things, quickly reestablishing themselves if interrupted, and interruption does not spell doom. Life on a planet does not end if an orbit changes, and often scarcely notices. The days may be cooler or warmer, the stars in a different place, and the seasons and sunset and sunrise times radically different, but overall, unless an orbit change puts a planet into the Sun, such that life fries, or into cold space, such that it freezes, it is not a death sentence. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Well, how did the government react to this stopped orbit? They had gone to code orange on the alert system ahead of this time, one step below Code Red, which would allow Homeland Security to force everyone to stay in their homes. They knew something was going to happen. We were approaching Planet X in our orbit. But they didn't expect a stopped orbit. To keep the public from knowing, they made a couple quick moves. The first was to remove any website giving information on sunrise or sunset times or constellation views. This included the Navy's own site, the place to go for this information around the world. The Navy is the world's timekeeper, in fact. The second was to outlaw almanacs, like the Farmer's Almanac, which likewise contained sunrise and sunset information. Carry an almanac, and you're a terrorist. That was the FBI's edict. So now it's classified information? And I quote from the FBI edict. FBI urges police to watch for people carrying almanacs. The FBI is warning police nationwide to be alert for people carrying almanacs, cautioning that the popular reference books covering everything from abbreviations to weather trends could be used for terrorist planning. The FBI urged police to report such discoveries to the local U.S. Joint Terrorism Task Force. For those who say that a stopped orbit is not possible because the seasons would not change, there is an explanation. Benign aliens, under direction from the Council of Worlds, have been tilting the globe to simulate the season. In fact, this was done during prior pole shifts, too, in man's memory. And in fact, this tilting is what the constellations show to those checking closely. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Apparent Precision, written December 2004. At the start of Zeta Talk, we introduced the concept of an element of doubt, whereby those unable to deal with the thought of an alien presence could take comfort in denial, a way out of the discomfort that would otherwise cause them to attack those speaking warmly about their visitations, or excitedly about their UFO sightings, or enthusiastically about what this might mean for mankind. A way out that would avoid panic turned inward that might result in severe depression or suicide or madness. A way out whereby the person unable to comprehend the Earth being visited by beings from other planets, coming in all shapes and sizes and with intellects far superior to man, could deny. They would have facts they could cling to, wave about, and declare that all is normal. During the decades since Roswell, mass sightings have been few and photographic proof debatable, and this is still the case. Explanations contrary to the obvious are still floated by the establishment for those who have this need. They can cling to the comfort that man as the center of the universe and the only intelligent creature provides. For those strong enough to face the facts, the mass of sightings is overwhelming, and the debunking done by the fearful, pathetic. How would such an element of doubt help mankind prepare for the coming cataclysms? And would such an element of doubt be mandated by the Council of Worlds? Why would it not, given that the options are a mass panic if the Earth changes are undeniable? We have stated that martial law is unlikely to be called deliberately unless a firm date is known, as it is difficult to maintain for more than a short period of time. Thus, no firm date, no martial law. But if the element of doubt is removed utterly, then with or without a date, martial law would not only be imposed suddenly, but during a state of panic on all sides, with the gunning down of those in the streets, gassing the hordes from planes overhead, and entombment in cities bombed all likely possibilities. Is panic only a possibility among the masses? Those in power are more prone to panic, as they fear more than the Earth changes. They fear losing power and the rage of those who have been lied to. What does this take? Among those intelligent enough to be able to travel across the universe in a wink, switch densities, control gravity, create blackouts, and travel back in time. Do you think the Council cannot control particle flows, the magnetism that is causing the Earth wobble, or cannot bend light to its liking? Think again. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Apparent Precision. For those who would say the day would not continue at 24 hours, as the Earth actually does an extra bit of a turn in order to face the sun exactly at noon as it moves round in its 365-day orbit, there is an explanation. The reason the clock ticks along so closely to 24 hours a day, with only a leap second added every few years, is not due to the momentum of the Earth. The Earth is sinking with the sun, a part of the Earth on its surface, clicking to something moving in the sun, the liquid core of the Earth pulling in that direction also to sync with the sun's motions. We are in keeping in our 24-hour day with the sun. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Newton's Clock, written May 2004. The entire solar system sweeps in the direction of the sun's rotation. The Earth faces the sun once a day in keeping with the sun's own rotation presentation, a touch point from matter on the Earth's surface and within its core to similar matter within the sun. Likewise, perturbed planets in the solar system, temporarily out of place as they pass each other, are pulled back into their orbit positions by outreach arms from the sun, snapping them back into place. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Newton's Clock. What about Venus and Mercury, who are, like Earth, close to Planet X as it passes the Sun? Are they not likewise stopped in their orbit? And if so, would they not appear out of place to those seeing the morning and evening star, which Venus is known to be? For the Zetas, Mercury is so close to the Sun that it slides behind Planet X. But Venus, like Earth, got stopped June 2004 when it came round in its orbit to encounter Planet X in its path. Venus, like Earth, was caught in the cup of particle flows that flow around Planet X on their way out from the Sun, in an eddy flow from which they cannot escape. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Where is Planet X? Written February 5th, 2005. People are astonished when we say, and seem to be saying, month after month, it's right next to the sun, it's coming around the sun, it's between the Earth and the sun. But in fact, in December of 2003, it stopped the way you would if you discovered an elephant in your driveway and that was the only way you could pass. Well, why wouldn't the Earth just sneak around? Because there are particle flows. Immense numbers of particles that create a block, and there's a crowding. Planets are swept along in their orbits and stay at a distance from each other where they are comfortable with the particles that go into and out of the sun. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. After an anticipated Venus transit of the sun on June 8, 2004, Venus thereafter loomed huge in the morning sky, far too close to the Earth to be in its track. A Venus transit is when Venus is directly between the Sun and the Earth and can be seen on the face of the Sun as a black dot as it crosses. Past transits have occurred in our recent past. The morning or evening star is normally bright, but what was reported was far outside of what those watching Venus in 2002, in 1998, and 1996 were used to. It was huge, and after the transit, when it should have been moving away from us, it appeared to be coming closer. Simply not possible unless Venus was caught in the cup and swinging towards us temporarily in the turmoil of the eddy flow. Indeed, it seemed so. And I quote from some reports. July 4th. I live in New Zealand and I work a couple nights a week from 3 to 7 a.m. I compared the size and brightness to some street lamps a couple blocks away and it was about the same. I've been working these hours for years, and I have never seen Venus look like that. And on August 23rd, I have never in my 68 years seen anything in the sky that looks like that. I've worked days and nights, come and go at all hours, and I have never seen Venus look like that. From here, it looks like Nancy Leader was right. Venus is getting pushed back toward Earth. It's brighter every day. End of the quotes. If Venus were also caught and halted in its orbit by Planet X and manipulated by benign aliens to fake a position around the Sun that humans were used to seeing, why would this be done? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Moving Planets, written June 13, 2004. Had tens of thousands of amateur astronomers not seen Venus transit after the loud announcement that this would occur, and had these amateurs made demands upon the establishment, doors would have slammed and resistance to open discussion would have increased. Rather than battering the doors of the cover-up with demands for an explanation, they are asking about anomalies around the sun, the type of open discussion that will allow the cover-up to dissolve. Thus, the Council allowed Venus to be pushed where it was reluctant to go and make an appearance and to return, a small matter in the scheme of things. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Evidence of this stopped orbit soon emerged. One of the earliest, the comets come early. Two comets were expected to reach perihelion in April and May of 2004, the point when they are closest to the Sun, the point when they are most brilliant with outgassing from their tails due to the Sun's heat. And I quote from a NASA report dated February 15, 2004. A newly discovered comet may outshine most stars in the sky by May. Designated comet T7, many reports already place the comet as brighter than magnitude 7, meaning that it can now be seen with binoculars. Reports also indicate the comet already has a visible tail nearly the length of a full moon. Another comet, Q4, may also reach naked eye visibility at nearly the same time, making 2004 April and May two of the busiest comet months in centuries. End of the quote from NASA. In February, these comets were not visible to the naked eye, yet were seen by many, and not in the position expected for these comets for the date seen. Thus, checking the list of comets known and expected, and the locations they should be in, those viewing these brilliant comets were confused. What were they seeing? Was this a new comet? The message boards were abuzz on the internet. And I quote from a report from Brazil. I took this picture in Cascavel, Paraná, South Brazil, on February 3rd at 8 o'clock p.m., and we're having summer here. At the time, the sun still was on the horizon, but I could see this star, then I shot these photos. The light from the comet was so strong I could see it even in daylight. Its light was stronger than moon or any planet or stars at the moment. We observe that this object is already in the solar system because the mass is visible. It's not a point of light. We could see its ethereal mass. Another detail, we have observed in the photographic camera that the movement in the sky was 60% faster than any star, moon, or planet. It's moving. End of the quote from Brazil. And the Zetas explained why the comets, which were expected in April and May, just simply did not make an appearance then. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Comets Come Early, written on February 19, 2004. What would happen if the Earth, backing up from Planet X, which is coming at Earth in a virtual head-on in its orbit, reversed orbit? Such a move would not affect the Moon, which hugs the Earth's middle and is influenced by the rotation of the Earth's core more than anything. Such a move would not affect where the stars are seen from Earth, as such slight movements of Earth in the cosmos does not affect the view of objects at a great distance. When the stars are visible, they would appear, positioned, the same. Distant planets such as Saturn and Jupiter would be viewed in the same position, as their orbits are long and their movements thus slow. How does the common man, given this confusing situation, sort out the truth of the matter? Fortunately, we have comets. When discovered, their orbits ascertained and computed. Comets Q4 and T7 were declared to arrive at perihelion in May 2004, and certainly not visible naked eye prior to that time, if ever. So what is it the common man is seeing in droves in the sky just after sunset? It moved, it has a tail, and is in their face, astonishing them. Comets come early because the orbit of Earth has backed into them. Comets orbit the Sun in the same counterclockwise motion that the planets assume in their orbits. Thus, the May perihelion dates assumed an Earth running ahead of the comets needing this time to catch up to the Earth in her orbit. Earth stopped, reversed, and the dates have arrived early. How early? Assume a halted and reversed orbit so that by the reports on February 3rd, this has occurred for 6 weeks. Assume the comet's not affected by Planet X, as they are too tiny to invoke the repulsion force of gravity. Thus they rush forward, Earth rushes back, 6 weeks for them, 6 weeks backwards for the Earth, a total of 3 months. Does this not compute on February 3rd to a May date? End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Comets Come Early. Beyond the comets, Earthlings soon had another object by which to confirm a halted orbit. By April 2004, something odd was viewed in the west, in the evening sky. Long rumored on the internet from NASA leaks and confirmed by the Zetas, the Earth has a twin in her orbit, a dark twin without water or life, which shares her orbit like two marbles in a track going round and round, which soon place themselves exactly opposite each other in the track. If the Earth is stopped in her orbit due to the presence of Planet X in her path, this dark twin would soon catch up. And I quote from reports of people seeing this. New York City. I know that it was at least 3 times bigger than Venus has ever appeared, possibly more. Obviously, it was bigger than a normal star because I thought it was a light on a building. And the color also. That yellow was flaming yellow. Then 2 minutes later, blue. The map I pulled up for New York City shows that Venus is not visible at that time. From Detroit, Michigan. I live in suburban Detroit. I saw it in the sky around 11 p.m. It was so huge I thought it might be an airplane coming in. And from Sydney, Australia. I see it every day slightly northwest. It's extremely bright as the sun sets, then reduces in magnitude to about the brightness of Sirius. It does actually change color from yellow to blue, then disappears below the horizon by about 9 p.m. And from the Netherlands. In the Netherlands, it's also visible for quite a while now. First, I thought it was just Venus, but I have the feeling it gained in brightness over the weeks. Also, its color has turned from white to more yellow, I believe. Last night, I was outside at approximately 1 a.m., and it was still visible. And I don't believe that Venus would still be visible that late. And from San Francisco. I saw it from about 9:30 to 10:30 p.m. my time. I looked at a map and did not see Mars near it or any other visible stars. It seemed alone. I went out again at 11 p.m. and it had just disappeared. The night was clear, and the earlier time I saw it, it wasn't low enough on the horizon to have disappeared. The next night I checked it was still bigger and brighter than any star I've noticed before, but strangely, it seems to have moved slightly more to the west. And from Phoenix, Arizona. I've been seeing it here in Phoenix for over a week now. It's very obvious. It's due west in the western sky about 10 p.m. my time. Very bright, yellowish, and the biggest star on the horizon. End of the quote. As usual, these instances do not make the major media, who is instructed to stay shut about any evidence of Planet X and just stick to the Michael Jackson trial. But the Zetas explained what the public was seeing in the evening sky, very yellow and huge, then quickly fading to blue, then disappearing. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Dark Twin, written April 19, 2004. Stars are visible in the night sky because of the laser of light they emit. Planets are visible because they do not absorb light, but reflect them. Satellites or man-made metal objects, such as a space station or probes, are visible because metal is highly reflective. Comets create a spew of gas, a cloud, that reflects sunlight but are not highly visible until this cloud develops, outgassing. But what of asteroids, which regularly take mankind by surprise, appearing for a close pass but unnoticed until they arrive? Did they not twinkle, reflect light, or glow? Asteroids are almost entirely composed of hardened magma from the core of planets in the asteroid belt that got whacked to pieces in the past when Planet X and its entourage of moons passed through the solar system there. Magma is black, or dark gray, not a surface that reflects visible light rays. What is it about the color black that makes it dark, unseen? It absorbs light almost entirely, reflecting little, and as a dead planet without water, without atmosphere, without vegetation coloration, there is nothing on the dark twin to change this. The dark twin has been viewed by astonished gazers due to the phenomenon that causes the rising and setting sun to appear huge and orange. The size of the sun overhead is a fraction of its apparent size when it rises or sets, due to the tendency of light rays in the red spectrum to bend. These light rays spread outward from the sun but bend toward the Earth due to Earth's gravity, and thus arrive at Earth from this spread, giving the appearance of a larger sun than is real. Why does the dark sun appear on the horizon, briefly, as a large yellow planet, the color and size changing back and forth to a tiny blue star? These are the colors least absorbed by the twin, thus most reflected. Yellow, being close to the color spectrum to red, bends outward and back toward the Earth, thus changing the apparent size. Blue, being a straight-line light not readily bent, reflects the true size of this object, which is equivalent to Earth. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Dark Twin. Meanwhile, by May 2004, the fact that the constellations just didn't line up were being noticed. This became increasingly obvious by summer, the point when the Earth tilt was not tipping in the expected direction at all. Like a fly on the top of a man's head as he moved about the room, the ceiling would always be visible, but the angle of view would change. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Constellation View, written May 24, 2004. Constellation views are more than what stands in the dead of night, looking out, and include a full 180-degree view sunrise to sunset, thus a good portion of the 360 view. In fact, for the Earth, the constellations visible from a hemisphere are the same throughout the year, except for the degree of light polluting the view. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The expected angle of view is carefully documented in programs that generate the expected view for a time and place, so can be used for comparison. Many observations from around the world were carefully documented by myself, Nancy, during 2004 and into 2005, showing clearly not only the halted orbit, but a wobble that later developed. And some quotes from Australia, July 2, 2004. The Earth is probably in some sort of tilting mode. We are presently in Australia, and I have, on a couple of occasions over the past 2 months, observed the Southern Cross compressed northward into the zodiac, so to speak. My estimate, based on hand spanning off the horizon, was a good 5 to 10 degrees out of position. The South Celestial Pole appears to be unchanged in reference to terrestrial south. Then the normal position of the Southern Cross would return. This suggested to me the Earth is tilting in a gentle rocking motion. 5 to 10 degrees is a good estimate on the variance that I believe we're experiencing. And from Quebec on August 27, 2004. Where I live in Quebec, Polaris is at least 10 or 15 degrees off where it used to be. These are the facts. And from an oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico on October 29, 2004, while watching the moon. I work nights in the oil field, so the guys and I check out the moon every night we're on the rig. We have some pretty good equipment here that is used to keep the rig perfectly over the drill hole, and I've used it to check out the moon's movement. We're also linked to the NOAA and Naval Observatory and GPS and other stuff I've been trained on. The point is this. The moon is supposed to move a certain amount every day in a certain direction and then back again over the course of a month. What it is doing is way off the mark. 3 nights ago, the moon was 17.3 degrees south of east. On the 27th, when we watched the eclipse, it was almost due east. Last night, 4 degrees north of east, and now tonight we measure moonrise over the horizon at 22.7 degrees north of east. We are using precision electronic equipment that keeps the rig aligned directly east-west along a particular latitude. From this latitudinal marker, we measure the deviance from due east and compare it with what the Naval Observatory says it should be. Our observations show the moon to be measurably out of place, an average of 23 days each month. I've been watching the moon for over 50 years and from both ends of the earth. This crazy stuff didn't start until last May 2004. Anyone with an eye and half a sense can see that the moon is exactly where it shouldn't be. And from Washington State on December 30th, 2004, while watching Polaris. We are near the 49th parallel here in Washington State, and Polaris should be at 49 degrees. Well, we're at about 30 degrees for Polaris. I was amazed at the amount of wobble I witnessed in an 11-hour spread yesterday evening and early this morning. Starting at 4:52 p.m., Polaris was at altitude 38 degrees. Then at 7:53 p.m., Polaris had moved to altitude 34 degrees. And then this morning, 2 hours before sunup, at 6:07 a.m., Polaris was at altitude 28 degrees. End of the quotes from folks watching the Earth wobble. During the summer of 2004, I noticed that the sun's arc was too high. From my perspective, it looked like it was about 85 degrees up in the sky, where 90 is overhead, where we're supposed to have something closer to a 60 compared to SkyMap. Paul in Seattle also noticed this high arc and had a precise way of measuring it. Welcome, Paul. Would you like to describe how you measured and what you measured?
I had built basically like a large protractor, and I could sight it in on the center of the sun, and I had a plumb bob which make sure that everything was perfectly plumb. Then I'd sight into the center of the sun and get the angle, and on June 2nd of 2004 at noontime, I had the sun at a 77 degree angle.
Well, how did you verify that this plumb bob was directly straight up and down, and how did that actually measure the angle of the sun?
Well, when you have a plumb bob and you have a level, and then you can make sure that everything is square, so that your protractor is square and plumb, and then you have your degrees of the circle, and you can read off of that at a straight edge that would run. I'd have to sight it, sighting it along the straight edge to the sun, and then you'd have it on the protractor, and that would give you your degrees.
Ah, that's how you knew where you had that poked in and set up on the Earth, that it wasn't crooked, and therefore your angle was crooked, because you had a level
right
on top of it.
Right.
And actually, your device is in the orbit section on the ZetaTalk website.
Yes.
As a photo there, because I thought it was so novel. I was actually using telephone poles and noticing the angle and doing trigonometry, but mainly, you know, the arms straight up overhead, the arms straight out at the horizon, and measuring the angle that way, which gives you a good guide. But there is no question that these measures, both by my crude method and your precise method, measured something far above the 60 degrees that the sun is supposed to be at its highest elevation during summertime. So this is due to the Earth being tipped forward, the North Pole being tipped toward the sun to simulate summertime, what the Zetas described that benign aliens were doing. Thank you so much, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Earth's magnetic poles are not aligned precisely with the geographic poles, our North Pole is sometimes hidden behind the curve of the Earth during the daily rotation in winter, the position the Earth was in when it stopped in its orbit. If Planet X, as the bully magnet, does not like the hose of magnetic particles coming from the Earth's North Pole pointed at it, what would happen? The North Pole of Earth would be pushed away when it presents, creating a wobble. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Earth Wobble, written July 17, 2004. The Atlantic Rift is skewed to the west in the northern hemisphere and then to the east in the southern hemisphere, following the deepest cleft between the continents as they rip apart during what is commonly called the continental drift. This Atlantic Rift is itself a magnet, as the tearing occurred during prior pole shifts and cooling magma was quickly aligned with the reforming poles, and thus became a third magnet encouraged to align with the Earth's core and Planet X during their encounters. At the point where the Atlantic Rift either faces or is in opposition to Planet X, this tugging to align occurs, creating the global quakes and noted on live seismographs only during this past year for the Earth, when Planet X has been in the vicinity. Why has the Earth wobble developed? Due to the S shape of the rift, leading with its southern edge more toward the east, this tug on the rift tends not only to tilt the Earth's north pole toward the sun, but also lean the north pole toward Planet X. This gives Europe to Ontario a sunrise with a northern tilt, too far to the north. As this southern portion of the Atlantic rift disappears around the side of the Earth at dusk, this grip is relaxed, moving its north pole back away from Planet X slightly. This gives the western half of the United States a sunrise location more in keeping with what is expected. This also moves the Hudson Bay and waters off Nova Scotia away from direct sunlight, thus the odd cold spot these regions are experiencing during the summer. As the southern portion of the Atlantic Rift approaches the dark side of the Earth, where it is again in line with the Earth's core and Planet X as magnets, creating magnetic resonance, the tug to align with Planet X again becomes strong, giving Japan the view of a sunrise moving north. But as the southern portion of the Atlantic Rift swings round to approach its dawn position, it is now more accessible to Planet X than at dusk. Approaching from the south, Planet X can directly grip this southern tip of the Atlantic Rift, so any wobble to align with the sun is slight. Thus, Siberia does not find itself with the lack of sunlight the Hudson Bay region does during its daylight hours. End of the quote from Zeta Talk on the Earth wobble. This wobble takes the shape of a figure eight if one is to look at the North Pole during a 24-hour period from high overhead. This was confirmed not only by readings taken around the globe for sunrise and sunset, which exactly lined up with the tilt of the globe at those times, but also by the Hudson Bay cold spot, visible in temperature maps and in snowmelt photos taken from space. The spot west of Hudson Bay became the coldest spot on Earth. And I quote from documentation in the orbit section of Zeta Talk. This cold spot persists, an uneven distribution around the polar circle. Note the land west of Hudson Bay at latitude 60 degrees is the same latitude as Siberia, the maps of Canada and Siberia representing equivalent latitudes. Latitude 60 runs just under the Scandinavian countries of Norway, Sweden, and Finland also. End of the quote. Well, reports from people observing the wobble as it happened poured in from Syracuse, New York, December 2, 2004, while watching shadows on the sidewalk. An amazing thing happened today at 6:34 p.m. in New York. Coming out of work, I decided to lean up next to the building wall I work at in downtown Syracuse. While waiting for my wife to pick me up, I was slightly cold while out in the sun, which was 2 feet in front of me. I decided to lean against the warm walls of the building instead of walking forward into the sunlight and having to stand unsupported. What I witnessed was truly amazing. The street faces east to west, and what I saw with my own eyes was the sun moving west to east for a few minutes. I was bathed in total sunlight and stunned for 5 minutes, and then it reversed direction and continued as normal. I know what I saw seems impossible, but I saw it. If I were not standing in the edge of the shadow, I would never have noticed. End of the quote. From L.A. in May 2005, an analysis of GPS receiver adjustments. GPS signals are from the global positioning satellites overhead, which allows someone with a receiver on the ground to determine their exact latitude and longitude. GPS is the means by which maps can be drawn in those cars which have guidance systems, for instance. This analysis confirms the wobble developed during the December 2003 time frame and has continued since. And I quote from the GPA analysis. The measured drift distance has more than doubled within the last 1 year and 9 month time frame. The GPS is hanging on my kitchen wall in one position and does not move. The trip distance is measured and recorded each day. The motions being measured are getting bigger with time by a factor of more than 2. These measurements are over and above what is being compensated for by the regular position correction updates done by the GPS managing agencies. And from the UK on October 30th, 2004, while watching the moon, and I quote, "The moon is moving as I watch it. I'm sitting at my desk in the UK, and at 9 a.m., I switched on my computer. As I opened my curtains, I observed the moon to the northwest and thought of all the message board posts made about the moon. In 10 minutes it moved and is still moving as I type. There is a church spire 300 meters from my house. In 10 minutes I watched it move from 6 to 7 degrees to the left of the spire, and now it is at 9:13 a.m., 3 to 4 degrees to the right and moving north. How can the moon move to the north by between 10 and 11 degrees in 13 minutes? I'm an accomplished map reader, an ex-Special Forces guy, so don't even try to suggest I don't know how to use a compass. Two of them both give the same readings here. It's now 9:20. Add another 4 to 5 degrees. It is still moving. This, for me, confirms that I no longer trust those who post on message boards denying any deviation from the norm. It's moving. This can be verified. It's a clear day, no wind or clouds in the UK Midlands. I'm sorry, but it's still moving. Add another 45 degrees at 9:28 a.m. This is happening live. I'm watching it. This is live. It's happening and it's verifiable. A compass, a landmark, and 2 readings 5 minutes apart. 3 times now in 35 minutes, it's moved over 20 degrees. First reading, 260 degrees at 9 a.m. It is now 9:40 a.m. and the moon is at 281 degrees. 21 degrees in 40 minutes. I've just checked a moon simulator and this is not normal. At 9 a.m., it should have been at azimuth 294 degrees, and at 9:40 a.m., at azimuth 301 degrees, a spread of 7 degrees in those 40 minutes. Also, the moon is way too far to the south, offset by 34 degrees. End of the quote from the UK. And from Utah on December 5, 2004, while noticing the sunrise angle. On December 5th, sunrise barely east of direct south. Wife and I looked out east-facing window, which always lets in the sun year-round. Wife says, "Where's the sun?" No direct sunlight coming in the window. Went outside to see the sunrise barely east of direct south. All shadows almost directly north. December 6th. The sunrise was normal in the east again. People thought I was nuts when I spoke of it. And a quote from Chile on December 10th, 2004, while capturing the sunset angle. This December 10th, I measured the deviation of sunset from west and I measured 31 degrees to south. I measured a sunset 6 degrees more southern than it should be 6 days from now. December 16th. And now I'm really baffled. To my total astonishment, I measured just 17 degrees south of west. Compared to the 31 degrees of just 6 days ago, it is not only northern than it should be, but it's also a very fast change. End of the quote from Shelley. What has the stress on the Earth's crust been during this wobble? It began being twisted like a jar of pickles being opened. The North Pole is pulled in the normal direction, the direction of rotation, while the South Pole is grabbed and held, something the Zetas call the Earth Torque. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Torque Effect, written May 1, 2004. By gripping the Atlantic Rift, the cause of the global quakes that have racked the Earth for over a year, Planet X is creating a slow continental drift. What is the effect on the plates on either side of the rift when the void is created? There is a slide into the void on the side experiencing a pileup, and thus the North American plate is dropping into the void, relieving the stress of compression along its northern border in the Arctic by a torque to the side as it does so. During the pileup in the Pacific, the Indo-Australia plate is being jammed under the Himalayas, causing this plate to drop and creating another void in the Indian Ocean. This is the cause of the African Rift, and this great continent is once again pulled into the void. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. This torque effect can be clearly seen on the IRIS maps from USGS. Since the great tsunami quake on December 26, 2004, when the Indo-Australia plate popped up at New Zealand and plunged under the Himalayas. Notably, there were 2 8-plus quakes just days before on December 23rd at the South Pole in Auckland and Tasmania. The Earth's torque was predicted and described in great detail by the Zetas 9 months earlier in May of 2004. And was predicted only by Zeta Talk. What do the IRIS maps show? The rest of the Ring of Fire is popping with earthquakes, but the west coast of the United States, of the North American continent, is almost asleep in comparison. This is because it's moving to the east and doesn't suffer that compression that the Pacific does during the Earth torque. And what are we to expect as we continue to approach the time of the pole shift, Planet X coming steadily closer? Couple of quotes from Isaiah 24:20. The earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard. And from an Egyptian papyrus recorded during the Jewish Exodus. Forsooth, the land turns round as does a potter's wheel. End of the quotes. The Zetas use the analogy of a spinning top about to topple over into what prophecy and folklore tell us will be 3 days of darkness for the Northern Hemisphere. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Potter's Wheel, written December 18, 2004. The analogy of the death of a spinning top equates to the description of what an Egyptian scribe recorded during the last pole shift, during the time of the Jewish Exodus. Clay on a potter's wheel is lopsided from the start, and as the potter starts to mold it, it is seen reeling around from one side of the wheel to the other. What was the scribe seeing for this description to apply? He was not seeing the sun too far south on a regular basis, morning and night. That would have inspired a statement akin to, forsooth, the sun hides in the south. He was not seeing the sun crossing at an odd angle on a regular basis, from morning to night. That would have inspired a statement akin to, forsooth, the sun retires early as it has risen early. Would the earth develop such an extraordinary wobble that it would sling its north pole from one side to the other in the course of a day? Consider the earth as a top, rotating as a top does. Consider the part of the globe having heaviness or drag to be the North Pole, as this is the part of the globe pushed to the side. The polar wobble, and at times an overcompensation, to and fro like a drunk. End of the quote from Zeta Tonk, Potter's Wheel. As the Book of Enoch, a peer of the books in the Bible, states, and I quote, "And all things on the earth shall alter, and shall not appear in their time, and the moon shall alter her order, and not appear in her time. And in those days the sun shall be seen, and he shall journey in the evening in the extremity of the great chariot in the west, and shall shine more brightly than accords with the order of light. And many chiefs of the stars shall transgress the order prescribed, and these shall alter their orbits and tasks, and not appear at the seasons prescribed to them. And the whole order of the stars shall be concealed, and the thoughts of those on earth shall err concerning them." End of the quote.
Hello, I'm Roger, president of Troubled Times Incorporated. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping mankind survive during troubled times when self-sufficiency may be the only answer. Our organization offers a twin set CD of survival information at cost to the public. The CDs are in hypertext and PDF format, two popular browser formats, and contain all the information collected by the massive Troubled Times website. The CDs allow you to browse this information offline at your leisure. The cost of the twinned pair is $4.10, and this includes postage. You can also get the survival booklet, a hip-sized booklet of the gist of the Troubled Times advice, for just $5, including postage. We offer a popular combo package for $7.50 that includes both the CDs and the booklet, with the lower postage expense reflected in that price. Send for your copies today to start making practical plans for your and your family's survival. Just click on the $4.10 CD link at www.zetatalk.com, and your copy will be on its way.
That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization little else matters.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.